Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Tonight we're going to talk about domestic violence, and I also would like to talk to everybody about something I came across today that has me pretty shocked. But first I want to read about the violence, because I think the repercussions of the other stuff I read today about young people, it's all connected with each other. And I, every time I dig deeper into Google, I get a little bit crazier, is the truth. And I, after I find something, I always double and triple check to make sure that it's not just Google baloney. And most of the time, it's not. But there's a lot of stuff out there that really isn't right. So what I want to talk about, though, like I said, tonight, is first of all these domestic violence statistics. Every 9 seconds in the U.S., a woman is assaulted or beaten. Every 9 seconds. How is that possible? Around the world, at least one in every three women has been beaten, coerced into sex, or otherwise abused during her lifetime. Most often, the abuser is a member of her own family. Domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women, more than car accidents, muggings, and rapes combined. Studies suggest that up to 10 million children witnessed some form of domestic violence annually. Now, right there, I mean, the first three things I read were bad enough. 10 million children witness some form of domestic violence annually. Nearly one in five teenage girls who have been in a relationship said a boyfriend threatened violence or self-harm if presented with a breakup. Every day in the U.S., more than three women are murdered by their husbands or their boyfriends. 92% of women surveyed listed reducing domestic violence and sexual assault as their top concern. Oh, my God. 92% are more worried about being hurt or being sexually assaulted than their health or their children or their relationships or their job. Domestic violence victims lose nearly 8 million days of paid work per year in the U.S. alone, the equivalent of 32,000 full-time jobs. Based on reports from 10 countries, between 55% and 95% of the women who had been physically abused by their partners had never contacted non-governmental organizations, shelters, or the police for help. Now, see, that's bad. And that's, of course, one of our dirty little secrets and one of those things that nobody ever wants to talk about. And I'm going to share with you something I watched on a video tonight that kind of backs that particular fact up. The costs of intimate partner violence in the U.S. alone exceeds $5.8 billion per year. $4.1 billion are for the direct medical and health care services, while productivity losses account for nearly $1.8 billion. Men who as children witnessed their parents' domestic violence were twice as likely to abuse their own wives than sons of nonviolent parents. Now, those facts are outrageous. And tonight, someone sent me something on Facebook that was a speech at Amnesty International by Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart was the second Star Trek captain, for those of you that are Trekkies. First, of course, was William Shatner, and then there was Patrick Stewart. And he, I don't know what he is, he's a Brit, I think, and very well spoken. And he did a very emotional lecture about violence. And it was about violence against women in particular. And at age 5, he witnessed his dad, who he was a weekend warrior, from Friday night until Sunday night. He would sit very quietly and wait for his father to go off on his mother. And he would, at 5 years old, throw himself in between them to stop them. And, of course, Monday morning, Dad would wake up ashamed of himself, sorry, all of the above. But, as Patrick said, you know, no little kid should have to be on guard like that all weekend, because he knows that eventually during the course of that weekend, any weekend, every weekend, his mom will be beaten. And when neighbors would call the police, and of course this I would imagine Patrick Stewart is in his 60s. So at 5 years old, we're talking about, 1950-something? And he said when neighbors would call the police because they'd hear the yelling and screaming, and the police would come in and see Patrick's mother laying on the floor, bloody and everything, most of the policemen's comments were along the lines of, it takes two to have a fight like this, or fights are never one-sided. There's always something. You must have done something. So as a 5-year-old, he absorbed all of this. He doesn't really share for how many years this went on, but I guess it was most of his young life. And in the beginning of his lecture, he said, 10 women a week, I did not find this statistic, but 10 women a week are found guilty of killing their spouse or their boyfriend due to ongoing domestic violence. And he said, had my mother ever taken a knife or anything to stop my father, I would have held her hand and helped her do whatever she needed to do. And as I said, this was very emotional, and you could feel his heartache and his shame, and but you could also see that it was good for him to let go of it, which is something that we talk a lot about on this show, about eventual forgiveness, because not forgiving never hurts the person you don't forgive. It just hurts you. So the next thing that kind of coincides with this is kind of interesting statistics. These are arrests. This is going to floor you. These are arrests that have taken place in the United States over the past year or so. At a public school in Texas, a 12-year-old girl named Sarah Bustamantes was recently arrested for spraying herself with perfume. A 13-year-old student at a school in Albuquerque, New Mexico, was recently arrested by police for burping in class. Another student down in Albuquerque was forced to strip down to his underwear while 5 adults watched because he had $200 in his pocket. The student was never formally charged with doing anything wrong. A security guard at one school in California broke the arm of a 16-year-old girl because she left some crumbs on the floor after cleaning up some cake that she had spilled. One teenage couple down in Houston poured milk on each other during a squabble while they were breaking up. Instead of being sent to the principal, they were arrested and sent to court. In early 2010, a 12-year-old girl at a school in Forest Hills, New York, was arrested by police and marched out of her school in handcuffs because she had doodled on her desk, "I love my friends, Abby and Faith," was what she reportedly scribbled on her desk. A six-year-old girl down in Florida was handcuffed and sent to a mental facility after throwing temper tantrums at her elementary school. One student down in Texas was reportedly arrested by police for throwing paper airplanes in class. A 17-year-old honor student in North Carolina named Ashley Smithwick accidentally took her father's lunch with her to school. It contained a small paring knife with which he would use to slice up apples. So what happened to this standout student when the school discovered this? The school suspended her for the rest of the year, and the police charged her with a misdemeanor. Goes on and on. Down in Florida, 11-year-old student was arrested, thrown in jail, and charged with third-degree felony for bringing a plastic butter knife to school. 11 years old. Back in 2009, an 8-year-old boy in Massachusetts was sent home from school and forced to undergo psychological evaluation because he drew a picture of Jesus on the cross. This goes on and on. There's like a million of them, and then websites to corroborate everything that I just read to you. Now, I ask you, all of this kind of goes together, doesn't it? We, the parents, sit in our homes, a place where our children are supposed to stay and feel safe, and the things that go on behind closed doors, very sadly, are not tea parties and meatloaf dinner at the table with the whole family talking about their day. There's other things that's going on. And then, instead of more protection when they leave that and go to the schools, then these simple, silly, ridiculous things, to teach them a lesson perhaps, to show them that they have to abide by the rules that are set down. You know, when Izzy is with us on the talk show, he often talks about when we try to stop a bad thing with another bad thing. He does it with me with role playing. Rini, did you feel like you wanted to stop fighting with me? Did you feel good about me? Did you like me? Did you care about me? And I say, no. But then when he turns it around and talks to me in a better way and treats me like he cares about me, it's actually hard for me to think of anything bad to say to him. And the whole time I read all this stuff today, that's all I could think of. But, you know, there's so much anger welling up in all of us for different things. And it's like, it's like a hole in a hose. The water's building up pressure coming through the hose, and it's headed for the other end of the hose where the water's all supposed to come out. But by God, if there's a hole someplace in that hose, it is so excited to find that little hole to release some of the pressure. And I think that is kind of an analogy about our behavior. I am going to open up the line so Miss Shelley can join this conversation. Hi, Shell.
Hey, Reen.
How are you?
I'm doing real good. I heard, as I came in, I heard the one statistic. I missed the first three because you said this is even worse than the other three. So I started in, you read a couple since then, so I forgot what the first one was I heard. But it was a shocking number. I think it was 10 million children see violence.
It's awful. It like blows you away when you think of it.
What were the first three statistics that you read?
The first three are: every 9 seconds in the U.S., a woman is assaulted or beaten. Around the world, at least, this is number two, around the world, at least one in every three women has been beaten, coerced into sex, or otherwise abused during her lifetime. Most often, the abuser is a member of her own family. And then domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women, more than car accidents, muggings, and rapes combined.
Well, you know, the shame of that is that from what I understand from some of the research that I've done, is that you have two different situations that actually perpetuate violence against women. Some of it's cultural, because there are some countries outside the United States where women are still subservient to men, and men can be physically abusive, and it's almost culturally acceptable. But when you're talking about countries like the United States, where the general population does not view it as acceptable, the underlying cause of domestic violence in that type of an incident, when it's not cultural, is, going back to everything else we're talking about, it's a lack of self-esteem. A man who is okay with himself, who has self-pride, is not going to be abusive to his girlfriend, his wife, or anybody else for that matter. What they do is they have, because they suffer from self-loathing and they can't wrap their brain around it, so in order for them to feel better about themselves, they take it out on somebody who is submissive to them. They will actually, you know, search out for somebody that they can own in that way. And they'll be a great guy to everybody else, but that poor woman that they've attached themselves to will end up being, it's almost like a surrogate for their self-loathing. They package it up in that woman, and they take out all their self-hatred on that individual, where if they had a normal self-esteem, they wouldn't have the ability, they wouldn't be able to be mean to another human being. So this all comes down to damaged self-esteem, whether it was because of how they were raised. I had seen this one, I forgot the name of the show, it was one of these documentaries on the cable channels where they investigate murders and things like that. And the show is called The Murderer Speaks. It's a new show out. And they were actually interviewing this man who stabbed his girlfriend to death. And when they were talking to him, he kept flipping in and out of remorse and then blaming her. And then he'd be remorseful and then he'd blame her. And she wasn't cheating on him, but she found out that he had gone to jail for trying to stab his prior girlfriend to death. She ended up surviving, and she's married now and she has some kids, because they interviewed her on the show also. But when somebody found out when she was planning on marrying this guy, who he was, so they gave her the article about how, like, 10 years earlier he had gone to jail for 10 years for trying to kill his previous fiance. And so she tried to break up with him, but it astonished me that she tried to break up with him after knowing his tendency, and he beat her to death. And when they were interviewing him, they had a psychologist on the show, and the psychologist was talking about the fact that he had such intense self-loathing that he would find these women, and they all looked the same, by the way. They all had light eyes and dark hair. This was something that did something to him. But he would talk about the fact that he was a monster. His father had turned him got him addicted to heroin, and his father is the one who told him, don't ever let a woman cheat on you, because his mother had divorced his father and basically kicked him out of the house. And he ended up connecting with his dad, and his dad actually taught him to act like this and to be violent, and he could never shake it. But he didn't like who he was. During the interview, he kept calling himself a monster. He said, my father turned me into a monster. He took no responsibility for it. It wasn't his fault. You know, it was his father's fault for turning him into a monster, and it was the women's fault for trying to break up with him, because his psyche couldn't handle that, you know? And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching this show, and it was astonishing. He's like, he was sorry about what happened to the women, and he even said that neither one of them deserved to have that kind of violence happen to them. And in his very next breath, after making that comment, he said, but they provoked me, and I couldn't help myself. So on one hand, he was saying they didn't deserve it, but on the other hand, he took zero responsibility for his violent actions.
Well, that was one of the statistics. Nearly one in five teenage girls who have been in a relationship said a boyfriend threatened violence or self-harm if presented with a breakup. And that's with teenagers. That's not even with, you know, married couples.
Yeah, and that's some sort of a mental aberration. Somebody wants to break up with you, and you think threatening them is going to make them want to stay with you. You know, if somebody wants to break up with you, let them go. If there was a real relationship, you know what? They'll come back. But to try and hold on to somebody by force or by threatening suicide or something nonsensical like that, it's a control issue. It means that you have no self-worth. Because if you have self-worth, if you're a confident person and you're dating somebody and they don't want to be with you anymore, you just release them, you know, because you know that you have the ability of meeting somebody else that you will click with. But when somebody is that attached to another individual where they get violent over it, that's a mental disorder. And
that's
there's
what I was
so
just gonna
much
say.
More
yeah.
Yeah, there's so much more of it today than there has ever been in history. And there's so many different causes for it, you know, that a lot of it is perpetuated almost with a gang mentality, because you hear people say, you know, they're friends or they're family members, like if they're in a gang, or like this guy's father who was a drug addict or whatever, they're actually like, don't let the woman talk to you like that, or make sure that she's not cheating and stuff like that. And they bring up all this doubt and guilt in the mind. And if you have somebody who doesn't have a strong character and is not already living with integrity, they give in to all this anger, and they act in ways that are really unconscionable, and they can't recognize it. That's the shame of it. They recognize it on some level, like this guy that they interviewed, but they take no responsibility. And that's a huge issue today, that people do not take responsibility, a lot of men, because that's the genre we're talking about right now. But these violent men, they take no responsibility for where their lives are. They have to blame other people for their failures, and they take it out on the one person that is the most vulnerable to them, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you just said, though, there's so many reasons today for being, I don't want to say all the typical words, but being troubled. There's so many reasons for being troubled. In the last, I don't have those statistics in front of me, but I've looked them up and shared them before. How many babies are born every year to drug addicted moms and dads?
Yeah.
And they have to deal with, often a newborn has to be sobered up, if you will, before they can leave the hospital. And then they have to deal with being in pain because they've been addicted to something for the whole period of gestation. So it's, you know, and then there's all the things that are out there for young people to try that are not really considered drugs, but they're called feel good right this minute stuff.
Right.
My kids were telling me tonight about some new marijuana that's chemically made marijuana or something that nobody could remember the name of it, Salsa or Souls or something. And they were talking about it in school. And I said, oh my God, there's not enough ways to mess yourself up anymore. I mean, you know, there's now it's somebody sitting very quietly trying to think of other ways to mess people up. I mean, life can mess you up. You don't need chemicals to do that.
That's true.
Just live your life, and you'll have plenty of problems. You don't need to go looking for them. And then, of course, when you grow up in dysfunctional surroundings, which many people I know have, and most of them are well-adjusted and happy adults. But if you're the kind of a person, or if your situation is so awful, or so impossible for you to live through without hiding from it. And by that I mean, you know, seeking places in your mind where you feel safe. One of my favorite all-time movies, of course, was Sybil, because it was the first time I ever understood multiple personalities. And even though in recent years, there's been some discussion about a lot of that movie was supposed to be true, for real. And there's been some discussions brought up about how a lot of it was, you know, they made it be a little bit more, I don't know, interesting, entertaining by some of the things they did. But even if only a third of it was true, that was enough. But it certainly makes sense to anybody who gives themselves a chance to analyze how, if you're going through something horrible, and you hear this from prisoners of war, you hear this from people that are kept in an intolerable situation, how they hide in their own head.
Yep.
How they find a place.
There is proof that there are some psychiatrists and psychologists that say that multiple personality disorder is a fake diagnosis, it doesn't exist. But that's not true, because they have scientific research where they've actually proven that there are some individuals that when they slip in and out from one personality to another, it actually alters them on a DNA level, and they've actually had them in one personality, they have one blood type, and in another personality. Now, this is all recorded. This is scientific. In another personality, they have a different blood type. So they're actually altering their DNA. They're changing their vibration that substantially. They had one where in one personality they had diabetes, and in another personality they did not have diabetes.
Yes, I read about that particular one. I did read about that one.
You know, so,
about
I mean,
the diabetic.
But they've done it. There was all this research that was done, and so multiple personalities absolutely exist. Now, whether it exists to the extent that it's been sensationalized or not, I don't know. But it is a real disorder. There are people that fragment due to trauma and other situations like that, and they actually become other people because, like you said, they hide inside their own head because it becomes too much, and it's almost like a protection.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know myself, if I'm sitting with someone who is dying and they're in a lot of pain and are consumed by fear because they aren't sure they're ready to go, but they're pretty sure that they're not ready to stay the way they are, and they're torn. I almost always tell them, before we get to this point, I always say, I want you to tell me the most beautiful place you've ever been in your life. Tell me where that is and tell me about it. And luckily, I don't remember who taught me to do that. Somebody must have told me about that years ago or something. But I do that, and then when we get to that point where things are really bad, I say, you remember that place? What place? I say, remember you told me there was a place where you went when you were a kid, and it was by a brook, and there was da-da-da-da-da, you know, and they say, yes. And I say, I want you to picture that in your mind. Now, that's a way to hide, too. And that's a good thing. To be able to do, and that's a precious thing. So part of that, I understand from that. I can understand how you could put yourself in a different place, and you read stories about that all the time, how people have lived through some hellacious things, abuse or mistreatment or any of those kind of things, and they put themselves in a totally different place. So I get that. That makes a lot of sense to me. And like I said, it works for people when, you know, the inevitable is happening. And you can see the relaxation and the peace that comes over them. So I appreciate that, and I think that that's a true thing. Now, like you said, I don't know, like, Sybil was one of my favorite movies. I loved the portrayal of Sybil by Sally Field. I mean, I thought she just was awesome and everything.
Yeah, it was.
And then I read later, you know, unbelievable. But I do believe, like I said, even if it was only, you know, partially factual, it was enough to convince me that our minds are an amazing thing, and they can really, really support us or really turn against us. And I think it is a matter of what you can do with it. Now, the deal tonight that I watched, I have it on my Facebook page if you want to look at it later with Patrick Stewart. He talks about this, and you can see the struggles that he has. I mean, he never breaks down or anything like that, but a couple different times he clenches his fist, and you can see that he's wishing he was 5 years old again with what he knows now, you know.
Right,
and,
right.
you can almost feel that emotion and that pain in his whole body language. But he says, you know, if she'd have ever tried to do anything like that, I would have held her hand with the knife in it. I would have helped her in any way I could have to get this to stop. And I guess for many, many years, he never talked about any of it, but he also says that he, when he is supposed to be an angry man in any of his movie parts, in any of his portrayals of someone else, he said, I really have to act because I can't let myself really get angry because I've always been afraid to touch that part of me for fear that it would be like my father.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now that's a pretty heavy statement. That's pretty heavy realization. But, you know, one of the things that we've talked about a couple different times, one of the reasons I brought up all this stuff is because I think of all the scars on all the people that I've met, especially in probably the last 15, 16 years, all my stuff at Hippocrates, and prior to that. I've always been one people were willing to share with, and I would listen to their stories. And everybody carries lots of scars. And I even said to my grandson tonight, I realize you're not ready for this, but forgiveness is the biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And you not forgiving somebody who hurt you does nothing to them. So holding that or keeping that like a shield of armor around you is the biggest act of futility anybody can commit.
Right.
Because they don't give a shit if you haven't forgiven them. They don't care whether you forgave them, didn't forgive them, want to forgive them, might forgive them. They don't care. If they cared, they never would have hurt you to begin with, more than likely.
That's true.
So the only one that really suffers is you.
Exactly.
And it doesn't. Forgiveness doesn't mean that you walk up to them and hug them and say, oh, I know you didn't mean to stab that knife in my heart. It's okay. It's all right. You know, I don't mean that kind of forgiveness. I mean the kind of forgiveness where you let go of the hurt that's in your own soul, that's staying with you and keeping you a little bit sick all the time inside. That's the kind of forgiveness I'm talking about.
Exactly.
And it's hard.
And it keeps you in that, whatever the event was, keeps you in the event. And it doesn't allow you to move past it.
That's right. That's exactly right. And then what it does very often, and we talked about this last night, I think, or not last night, the night before, we talked about this, that what happens when you do that is it rules your future.
Exactly. And
you
it
know,
limits
it,
your future. It rules your future, but it
limits
your future.
That's the biggest thing, the limit that it puts on who you can be and who you have the potential to be if you don't let go of all of that. And
exactly.
I think the thing of it is people think when you say that you mean forgive them in the sense of, you know, forgiving a loved one for saying something that hurt your feelings. Or I'm not talking about that kind of forgiveness. I'm talking about purely selfish forgiveness. The kind of forgiveness that lets you go, not them.
Right, right.
And I think when I talk to so many young people in particular, they're so hurt by things that have happened in their past. And some of the things, God knows I don't blame them. I get chills up my back thinking of some of the things that I know some young people I know have endured. And there are no excuses, and there's nothing anybody can say to them to make what has has happened to them, okay, because it's not okay. But, you know, and I've said this before too, this is not a Monopoly game. You don't get to quit and take the board and go home. This is life. And
well,
you have to do things to make it easier to live.
Well, you know, when I was telling you about that show that I had watched, one of the things that impressed me on it, now I'm talking about the victim, this is the one where the guy had tried to kill his first fiance and didn't succeed. Now, what he did to her is he stabbed her, but he stabbed her 36 times. And one of the places he stabbed her, because of this thing he has with their eyes, is he stabbed her in the head, and the knife broke off behind her eyes. Now, she looks fine. She's got a little bit of a scar.
God.
But when they showed the x-ray, the blade was in, he broke it off inside her head. So when they x-rayed her, when she got to the hospital, her head was so swollen, they didn't even know if her eyes were okay, because her face is, her eyes were swollen shut. So when they were interviewing her, her one eye was like a little lazy, but she was still a pretty girl. I mean, she recovered from it. And at one point, they kept going back and forth, going to him, going to her, going to other people, interviewing. And near the end of the episode, that's when she told everybody that now she's married, she has a child with her husband. She's very well-adjusted, and somebody said something to her about being a victim, and she goes, "What are you talking about?" She says, "I'm not a victim, I'm a survivor." And she said she never, ever felt like a victim. She never let herself go there. Now, here's a woman who was abused during the relationship, tried to break up with this guy because of it, got stabbed 36 times viciously, and never saw herself as a victim. As soon as she recovered in the hospital, she was so happy that she survived that she felt lucky. Now think about that. She felt lucky, okay?
Yeah.
How many people have gone through something that isn't even 1/100th of what this woman went through and remain a victim for the rest of their life? You know? And I've heard of other situations like that where people went through something so horrifically violent or awful where they became permanently crippled or something, and yet because they survived, they felt lucky and they didn't go there. When you can really rise above that and look at the situation that you were in, the fact that you're not in it anymore and that you survived it, if you can embrace that, it empowers you and it strengthens you. But when you relive it every day and you're re-injured by it because of the memories, you're actually re-victimizing yourself, because that person that did whatever they did to you is not there anymore doing it. Now you're actually victimizing yourself, and people don't realize it because they feel that they need to get that story out. They want to get compassion from people, and that's totally understandable, but they're actually re-victimizing themselves the more and more they tell the story, unless they tell it in a way like this woman did, where she was telling it to inspire people to be survivors and to be more self-aware when they were in a relationship with somebody. That was her big thing, because she said that she should have seen the signs before she allowed this guy to be that violent with her. You know,
well, I think we don't, you know, that's like hindsight being 20/20, though. You know, I think in a lot of cases we feel like, you know, if we knew something we could make a difference, but I'm not always sure that's true. Are you?
Well, like in the instance of the woman who ended up getting murdered by this guy, after she had already read the articles of what happened to the first one, she shouldn't want to break up with him alone. So that did shock me about the story, that mm-hmm. here she knew how violent he was. She knew what his potential was. She was breaking up with him because she was afraid of him and yet went alone. I still have that's heart-wrenching. And her family was, like, shocked by it also, that she didn't take somebody with her. Not that he couldn't have looked for her on, but it wouldn't have been in the moment anymore, you know. So
right.
I think sometimes we can lessen
certain things that are happening to us just by being self-aware. But I think what happens is that a lot of times, and I've done it myself, so I'm speaking from experience, a lot of times you're in a situation and you think that you've got it under control, that it can't get worse. And maybe you have some regard for the person, or you think you're helping them and you don't want to give up on them. So you say, okay, well, I'm gonna go through this because eventually it'll get better. And meanwhile, somewhere in the back of your mind, something's telling you it's not going to get better, it's only getting worse, and you don't want to listen to that little voice because you're trying to do a good thing. You're trying to be supportive of somebody that you feel is lost somehow. You know, and you think that if you just keep throwing concern and love at them, that they'll eventually rise above their bad behavior. But the problem with that is that that's enabling. And it doesn't work. I've gone through that with a couple of people where I thought I could help them, and I put myself in positions where I could be heard either physically or financially, and it didn't work, you know. But I kept thinking if I was kind to this person and I assisted them, that they would eventually stand on their own 2 feet, but unfortunately they don't. It has to be that person. The only people that can uplift themselves are the people themselves. You can't do it for anybody else.
That's absolutely true, honey.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. But if you could, I'd just go around and do that for everybody. That's all I do all damn day.
Yeah.
If each one of us could change that many people's lives, I mean, who wouldn't want to go around and just do that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
but you have to do it in a way that doesn't put you in jeopardy. I mean, to be kind to somebody, to smile at somebody, you know, to put out random acts of kindness is something we should all do in every moment of every day. And, you know, and you should never take your frustrations out on somebody because you never know what they're going through. You know, if you take responsibility for how your day is playing out and don't take it out on other people. I mean, it's just simple guidelines to being a good person. You know what I'm saying? But the bottom line is that you can't make other people whole. And if there's something deficient in them, you're not going to fill it. And what's going to happen is they're going to use you, and they're going to use you, and they're going to use you, and they'll keep taking it from you, but then they never give back. And at some point, all of a sudden, you're spent. And now you're injured because of the relationship, because you've been used up, because you never got anything in return. So if you're going to do that, do it being self-aware. If you really want to just help that person with no expectations, okay, and whether it works or not, and you go into it with your eyes wide open, that's different because you've prepared yourself. And if it does not end up helping this individual, at least you can walk away and you're not injured. But when you go into it, like I did a couple of times, when you go into it to try to help somebody and it backfires and you kind of put your all into it and you put yourself in jeopardy, that's when you have to be self-aware, and not live in a situation where you think you're going to create a different outcome. The only person who can create that positive outcome for themselves is the person that's in the middle of a situation.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about that a lot. That's for sure. And that's. But of course, there's also like. The scenario that you're 5 or 6 years old, or that you're even 10 or 12 years old, even in some cases you're 16 and 17 years old, and you still need to make the right decisions for yourself to make yourself whole again, and forgiveness is one of those things, and some of the other things that you have to come to grips with and get past, even though hearing those words from somebody else's lips causes anger in a lot of people who have been through something really, really traumatic. But support is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another person can't fix you, but most definitely another person can hold your hand while you're trying to fix it. Another person can stand beside you while you're trying to fix it. And that's what we ask of each other in this world. I don't expect anybody to make me into somebody I'm not. Even if I might want to be somebody different, I can't say, okay, Shelley, get busy because I don't want to be Rini anymore. I want to be, Angelina Jolie, or I want to be this one. You can't do that for me, but can you support me? I say, okay, Rini, if you really want to do that, I'm right beside you. That's
right.
Really more what's missing with all of us than that attempt by all of us to do something really magical, almost. I don't want magic from anybody. And I also believe that what you do for yourself, anything you do for yourself, anything you do that makes you better, makes you more successful, makes you happier, gives you a sense of pride rather than let somebody else do it for you. The first car you have to pay for, if mom and dad give it to you, you wreck it in a year. The mm-hmm. next one that you pay for yourself, you take better care of.
Right.
Because you bought it. And this time, it's just different. So it's the same thing with us as people. I know that I have people I can depend on if I make a decision that I want to try to do something. This radio show is proof of that.
Absolutely.
You know, this is something that I felt I needed to do, and I'm being supported in a lot of different ways from a lot of different people just because they believe in me. They're not doing it for me. They're not telling me how to do it. They're just supporting me. And that's the beautiful thing about people. We can do that for each other, and that's, like, so easy and so non-committal that there needs to be more of it. But again, when you're talking about a child who at this particular point in time, like Patrick Stewart said, he was 5.
Wow, I know. It's astonishing.
Yeah, when you're 5 years old, what do you know from nothing? You don't. I mean, unless you're AJ. AJ is a different story.
I have a hard time wrapping my brain around how anybody can be violent to another person anyway. I just don't understand it. But it's even more astonishing to me when an adult can be like that in front of a child or to a child, because you have someone there that is so vulnerable, and it's like I don't want to understand. I'm glad that I don't. I can't wrap my brain around it. You know.
That's because you're normal. But you have to remember that there's a lot of us that are out there that aren't normal, honey. Like I just said, there's over the last 100 years, a lot of things have taken place in our, what's the word I want, in how we live, in people's problems, stuff like that. The fact that there's so many babies born addicted, the fact that there's so much mental illness due to drug use and alcohol use. It's a sensitive subject because I think people would rather not believe that it might be their fault that their child or maybe even their grandchild has got problems that are due to their life choices when they were younger.
Right.
But a lot of times it's true. And because of that, and because of all those choices that are out there, and because of all the things people can do today to hurt themselves and in the long run hurt their reproductions, there's a lot of problems that people aren't even, we probably haven't even reached the worst part of that yet, to be honest with you. So things. Go ahead.
Well, what I was talking about a few minutes ago had nothing to do with children. I was talking about, grown adults who try to fix other grown adults, and they have the best of intentions, but you can't fix another human being. Now, to be supportive of somebody, to be there with moral support, even to make strong commitments, is fine. But be aware, don't put yourself in jeopardy, whether it be physically or financially or emotionally or any way like that. Really, let's see, I'm talking about an old friend of mine who ended up becoming a drug addict. We were best friends for over a decade. And she had been a drug addict when she was younger, which I didn't know about. This was way before I met her. And during our friendship, she got hooked back on drugs again. And it was like I saw her disintegrating, but I cared very much for her. And I thought that if I just kept supporting her and keeping things even keel for her, that it would enable her to get back to what she was when we first became friends. And it actually had the opposite effect. The more that I tried to help her, the more she felt that her life was in control because I was helping her, and she actually went deeper into the drug use. So I actually made it easier for her to disintegrate even more, and I didn't realize it at the time. So my intentions were good, but it ended up backfiring. And I got hurt both financially because I had helped her a lot, and near the end, what broke our friendship up, and I think I shared this story with you once, that she tried to kill me. She actually, thank God her boyfriend was there because she had a knife in her hand, and she went after me, and her boyfriend was there and stopped her. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here even talking to you on this show right now. But she disintegrated to that, and then she didn't remember it. When I confronted her a week later, she didn't even remember doing it. She said I was lying. Meanwhile, there were four people there that had to pull her off of me. And she was so high that she didn't even remember doing that. You know, so that's what
coincides with what I'm talking about. Right. You're talking about in the first person. I'm talking about the offspring of somebody who's gotten themselves into that mess. Those same people that are in that bad place, reproduce. And then we wonder why, you know, these young people that are out there are having so many struggles with, antisocial behavior. And that's a big part of it. And one of the things, you know, like all the arguing, that's a new word that I just made up. It's a short word for argumentation or something. I don't know for sure, but I'm sure it's going to be in the dictionary by the end of next week. So
I totally expect that.
I think that if people would understand that all of this stuff with the guns, the arguments about, you know, making guns illegal and doing this. Well, the truth of the matter, and every time I read any of these things, I'm like, they're right, but something has to be done. Guns don't shoot people. People shoot people. This and that and the other thing. But I think to myself, really, what has to be looked at and considered is people's mental health. And until we get to the point where that really is something that is my favorite word, observed and paid attention to and reacted to, then not much is going to change, because we have a lot of people out there who need some attention, mentally speaking.
Absolutely.
And that is one of our biggest problems. I mean, somebody sent me a picture today of a woman sitting on a bus, stark naked. New York City bus lines, and she's sitting there on the bus with her shirt pulled up around her neck and her pants pulled down around her knees. And I'm like, okay. And there she sat, and somebody took a video of her, of course. But
of course.
You have to know something's terribly wrong there. What about all the people that we would get at Hippocrates? What about the lady that took off all of her clothes and went in the fountain in the spa?
Oh, I can't remember.
Or
that.
what about the person that wanted to be a mom who wasn't built like one and took all of the lamps out of the fountain and gave one to her favorite guests and put them in their room in the middle of the night? There's a lot of that kind of problem out there too that has to be recognized and dealt with.
Right.
So
right.
That's another. You know, once we get people being nice to each other and once we get people caring about each other and everything, then maybe that issue will be addressed as well, because that is definitely one of our major problems.
Right, and we had discussed that one night about, because of insurances and things like that, how many people with really severe mental disorders are shoved out of these mental hospitals as soon as the insurance runs out. It's like, oh my God, why isn't the government doing something about that? Mm-hmm. You know, why isn't there government-funded institutions? So you have these people that are dangerous. They can be either dangerous to themselves or other people, and they're just out on the street because their insurance ran out. How ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
One
yep.
of the other things that something that I've seen only maybe in the last 10 years or so, although it's gotten worse in the last couple of years, is this thing with, and it's almost like a cultural thing. There was a show I was watching the other day, and there was a woman who acted like this, so that was fresh in my mind. But this whole thing about people talking about not being disrespected, but saying that in a violent way, where if you don't respect them, like a gang member or somebody like that, but, I mean, these aren't people that belong to gangs. It's just like a normal person, and if they think you disrespected them, they want to take a knife to you, or they want to get the fisticuffs. I was watching this show. It was called Bar Rescue, and this guy, he's an entrepreneur, and he goes around, and he saves these businesses, and he's run over 800 businesses, very successful, and he went into this bar, and one of the bartenders was this woman. And he's trying to tell them how to fix his company. Now he's a very successful man. I mean, he saved over 800 businesses, but he's basically making comments about the staff and that part of the problem why they're losing money is because the staff isn't doing things properly. Well, instead of sitting there going, okay, well, you know, we're making some mistakes here. It's got to be an issue. She starts cursing this guy out. Like, you're disrespecting me, and who do you think you are, and I'm going to mess you up. And this is what she's saying to him. She's actually cursing at him on camera because they had to, like, bleep out some of what she was saying. She's telling this guy, because he's telling her she's not doing a good job, she's going to mess him up. I'm watching this, and I'm, like, flabbergasted. And she was a pretty girl, and with a mouth like a truck driver, and I'm like, and I've seen this before. I've seen this with other people. When you try to give them constructive criticism, they go off on this tangent instead of bettering themselves and saying, okay, maybe I should listen to this person. Maybe the advice they have is good. He wasn't being nasty to her. He was giving advice to all of them. She's the only one who popped off like that. She ended up getting fired right on the show, you know.
Wow.
But it was astonishing because I've seen this behavior in real life. I mean, this was a TV show, one of these reality shows, but I've actually seen people like that. And it's like, where is this whole thing with don't disrespect me coming from to the point where if somebody's saying somebody's disrespecting them, they feel that they have the right to be violent to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And because
mm-hmm.
what she said is, what she said right on camera, she said, I'm going to mess you up. It's like, and she pointed to his face like she was going to do something to his face, you know? And I've seen these women get in fights in the parking lot. I saw it in Walmart. This was a couple months ago. And the one woman was like, you know, how dare you disrespect me? I'm like, oh, my God, they don't even know each other. Where is that coming from?
I just watched this yesterday in Home Depot, exactly like this.
So you know what I'm talking about. And
it's
almost like an epidemic. It's like, you know, if somebody said something rude to me, I would go on about my bit because I don't care. You know, if it's somebody that's not integrally important to my life, first of all, if it's somebody important to me and they say something rude to me, I'm going to ask them, what's going on? Why are you upset? What are you upset with me over? You know, just like what Izzy talked about. I would want to resolve it. If it's somebody that doesn't mean anything to me, what do I care what they think of me? I mean, seriously. I'm going to be violent with somebody and that's going to make them think better of me? I mean, come on. Let's exert a little common sense here.
That's right. That's exactly what is wrong. This overreaction, but a lot of that is because people are not okay. We got to
go.
It's that time of night. Somebody just sent me a poem, and I was trying to get permission from them to read it, but I don't have enough time right now. It's from an unknown author, but I loved it. Wait a minute. Maybe I do. I have 17 seconds. Grades are getting low. The teens are getting high. That 12-year-old is pregnant, and her parents wonder why. A first grader is cursing. A third grader has been raped. Just take a look around you. Isn't the system great? Who isn't faded these days? Teens are sending nudes. Kids are getting beaten. The teachers see the bruises. No calls for help are spoken. Teens are smoking weed. Young girls are cutting. This isn't what we need. the marks of taunt and yelling. Parents are getting divorced. That 14-year-old is drinking beer. This can't get any worse. A little girl has tried to kill herself and just got bullied for it. Nobody seems to care. Another kid has been expelled for a stupid dare. I don't know who the author is, but it does sum up what a mess we are in, very sadly.
Yep.
So on that note, we have to sign off because we, you know, we have used up all of our time, but I want to thank everybody. And any listeners that are out there, I hope you get the fact that we are moving forward and that things are going to be better. I said this the other night, and I'm going to say it every night. I feel it in my bones. You know, once you get so far down, you can only reach up, and that's what we're doing now, and we're going to do it together. So from my heart to yours, everybody, good night and God bless. Miss Shelley, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yes, you will.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I love you, and good night, everybody.
I love you, too. Good night.